Chapter 41. Liv walked through the abandoned orange groves silently, clouds of superviolet billowing from her with every step. Drafting was as easy as breathing now, and the many-fingered clouds spread 100 paces or more from her in every direction. She patted the fallen statue of the broken man, remnant of the long-dead old Tyrian Empire. She didn't go to the burnt-out buildings and rubble of Recton. She didn't go to her old home. She was here for something important. She crossed the river, appearing to walk on water, small geysers of superviolet rising to support her feet at each step. She arrived at the old battlefield, long overgrown with low plants, mostly brown this late in the summer. Craters were still visible from artillery and magic both. 18 years on, but now rain lilies and hyamanthus huddled in those shady, watered places, beauty flourishing over ugliness, new life sprouting from rot. Uncertain what her full powers might do here among the dead, she withdrew most of them into herself. Sundered rock beckoned her, and she climbed it. Belio, she summoned, and a moment later her ring sparkled. Her nameless servant hadn't remained nameless for long after she had broken the halo. He'd seemed surprised that she had known what his name meant. Belial meant yokeless, so different from Belial, worthless. Yokeless, she'd asked, and yet you serve me.
One needs no yoke to be compelled to serve when one believes in the one whom one is serving.
She'd been flattered, but of course he'd meant it to be flattering.
The chained one comes, mistress, Belial said. 500 paces, moving slowly so as not to give alarm, I believe.
The approaching Mott was attended by only 2 guards, both blue-whites, and thus fully under her control. Her full retinue was 1/2 a league away. They reached the base of the opposite side of the cracked dome that was sundered rock, and she began to climb it alone. Samilla Sayer had been a hero of the Prism's War, and later the lover of Usef Tep, her former enemy. They had come to Tyria together to submit to the freeing. Finding war threatening once more, Samilla had intended to die fighting against the Colour Prince at Garriston. Usef Tep had done so, but she'd lived, and now she served the man responsible for her lover's death. Funny how war makes villains of heroes and slaves of the free. Liv had narrowly missed meeting the legend in Tyria, but had later met her in Rue, when the mousy genius had figured out in moments a calibration problem with the great mirror of Rue that had stumped Liv and others for hours. If anyone was going to figure out what Liv was really doing, it was she. But did Samilla even remember what she'd done at the great mirror? Did she remember those coordinates she translated in an instant? In a few minutes, the middle-aged woman had climbed the opposite side of Sundered Rock, allowing the gulf to sit between them. The duolith itself, shaped like a cracked egg, lay partially submerged. It was hundreds of feet tall, and lay grey in the sun, with scorch marks faded by nearly 2 decades' passage, but not gone. A few withered tufts of grass clung to its overhanging halves, and there was an opening below as if the egg, broken in halves, had spilled its innards. Except it was no egg, but not nearly an empty shell. Probably the rock debris between the 2 halves had simply been cleared by looters, certain that here at the epicenter of the holocaustic finale of the Prism's War, there must be treasure hidden. Maybe there had been, once. The Colour Prince had gotten his black Luxin from somewhere. Oddly, Samilla Sayer had affected few of the usual traits of a white, much less a god. Her skin wasn't crystalline, except her left hand, as if she were still running the experiment to see how blue Luxin might function as skin in an application that required so much dexterity, sensitivity, and motion. The rest of her looked severe and beautiful, the olive skin of an Atashian, but barely wrinkled even at 44 years and 17 days old, because she'd been a noble and careful to protect her skin. She was slender and striking, her naturally blue eyes now solid cerulean, irises and sclera both. But her dress was murex purple, a simple preference, a sign of her obscene wealth now, of trying to find some common ground with Liv and her superviolet. Was it a sign of not caring to wear blue every day? Yes, I'm the blue goddess, I needn't wear blue constantly, thank you. Or was the colour in honour of her Usef Tep, the purple bear. How much of the old similar sayer was left in the new Mott? Regardless, in Liv's new sight, the older woman crackled with power. A throbbing heartbeat of blue will scattered its near-cousin Superviolet with every breath, and spectral bleed made her glow in Superviolet like a sword plucked from the forge and held in the air for a few long moments. The color dulled quickly from white-hot to angry red to a sullen gray, but you'd still be a fool to touch it with your hand. There were mirrors to each other. Outsiders, logical women, cool and rational, both captured, both entwined, but Liv young and Samilla older. Liv unproven and Samilla renowned. Liv with all her tales before her, Samilla with her legends behind, and, most importantly, Liv free, while Samilla wore the Color Prince's black jewel at her throat. If she disobeyed him or attempted to remove it, it would behead her. "Hail, Lady of Sorrows," Samilla said across the great gap between them. Liv had never heard the term before. She was probably supposed to ask about it, but she had no idea what games the Color Prince would be playing here, nor any interest in playing them. "Hello, Samilla. Lady Mott, is it now?" "You've taken the seed crystal," Samilla said, "without taking a slave collar. Impressively done." She turned to the side and said, "No, Mina, I think it's important to give credit where it's due." There was no one there, though, not even in Superviolet, not even as an afterimage of power. Now that was interesting. Was Mina Samilla's version of Belial? Liv coughed, clearing her throat. "Can she see you?" Liv asked as she covered her mouth. "No," Belial said, "though she knows I'm here. You might find it in your best interest to hold back as much information as possible." That they both had invisible helpers attending them, but that those were invisible even to other gods, meant something, but Liv wasn't certain what. And had there been Samilla slipping in letting her know about her own attendant, or had it been on purpose? "Beautiful ring," Samilla said. "Is that where you keep the seed crystal?" "Thank you, but no. A ring on the finger seems an awfully vulnerable place to keep such power, doesn't it? On the other hand, sorry, no pun intended, I did want a small physical reminder of my power to flash about when such things might prove helpful." Samilla Sayer seemed to like the idea. It was a lie, though, the same lie Liv wanted Belial to believe. She'd sent him to get her a suitable ring, and while he was gone, she'd turned her powers to making a gem that would sparkle and glow only when he was near. Then, because it glowed every time Belial did appear, he simply thought it glowed at all times. She'd encouraged him to think it merely part and parcel of her vanity by also sending him for dresses and ermine and other jewellery. It was lovely to have such an obedient and powerful servant, but Liv had spent too much time being bent to the will of others to actually trust him. "Where do you keep yours?" Liv asked, as if they were exchanging fashion tips.
"Oh, incorporate it with my body, of course, as you keep yours. I simply wanted to see if you'd try to mislead me. Make me think you were ignorant where you are not."
And Liv, of course, had. Caught. Damn it. Liv had a brief flash of the same rage she'd felt before at Samilla, when she'd humiliated her by figuring out the problems of the Great Mirror so easily.
"You do serve the man who tried to enslave me," Liv said, smiling at the bitch. "He enslaved me first." "There are many ways one might react to that," Liv pointed out. "There is no black lux in here," Samilla said, ignoring her. "Is there not?" Liv asked. "It was all carried away long ago. You're wasting your time if you came here looking for it." "Is that why I came here?" Liv asked. "You grew up in Bloody Recton, yonder," Samilla said. "I told the White King you might be visiting there to say goodbye, to mourn your dead. He thought the only reason you'd come would be for this battlefield."
"No, neither, actually."
"The White King?" Liv asked.
Samilla Sayer shrugged.
"One who brings all the colors together, perchance? The opposite of a prism?" That's not how prisms work, Liv pointed out. To bring light back together, you'd use another prism. We had two prisms at the same time once. Before your time, Sir Milliseer said sarcastically. It didn't give us white.
You old hag.
So Coyus sent you to stop me from wasting my time? Liv asked, amused. So kind of him. He wants you to rejoin him, Samila said. You don't wear his collar, but our kind cannot hide from each other. He can find you anywhere in the world. On the other hand, you will also be able to feel him or any of the rest of us coming for you. It would make for a tedious chase. Instead, he offers you a kingdom, Elita specifically, traditional home of Ferilochs.
What do I care for Elita? Liv asked.
What do you care for any human land? You're a god now, but it is good to have a home, and a people who will rally to you, and worship you.
He really thinks he's going to win, doesn't he? Liv asked.
At this point it's nearly inevitable. The question is really where you'll be standing when the fighting stops. He also offers the superviolet Bane, without which you will never reach your full power.
My Bane? He has it? Liv asked.
Oh, now you've tipped your hand, haven't you? Samila said.
Liv didn't know what she was talking about.
Never mind. He guessed as much.
Guessed what? Liv asked.
You are the reason why the Chromeria hides so much knowledge, Aliviana Danavis. You incorporated your seed crystal before it made a bane. If you'd waited until the bane had formed around the crystal and then incorporated it, you'd have both your powers and the place that magnifies them. Having incorporated the seed crystal too early, it will never form a temple. Unless you can figure out something even our ancestors struggled with. A Ferilux would be the one to figure it out, if any would, though, I suppose. Good luck.
He's found a second seed crystal? Liv asked.
Not yet. As you might guess, with it being invisible and with superviolet drafters of any skill so rare, superviolet seed crystals are the hardest to find. But he has teams looking for it. You understand, it is both the carrot and the stick. He can give it to you if you will serve him, or if he finds it, he can kill you and make a new empowered Ferilux who will be loyal to him.
Liv's heart fell. She might be the most effective searcher for Superviolet, but the other gods would be attuned to such a thing, and the White King could search many, many places at once. It would be a race to the death. There was no way of knowing if another seed crystal had even formed yet. Liv might spend every moment for decades searching for something that didn't exist, and would have to because her life would depend on it. Meanwhile, the White King would simply have subordinates do it.
That's your deal? Liv asked. I may live as a slave queen? His deal. I don't care what you choose. Technically, you've rebelled. Being offered to live is generous in itself, but you're special. And Superviolet has always been different and, bluntly, weak. You will never have to wear the Hellstone collar. But yes, you will bend the knee. Servient omnes. All shall serve, child.
I won't, Liv said, but it sounded hollow. Samila Saya sighed.
Seasons come and seasons go, but youth will always think they know more than their elders.
And sometimes they'll be correct. But Liv knew she was being immature. That was fine. Perhaps it would make them underestimate her. Something more human entered Samilla's tone when she said, after a pause,
I do hope this is one of those times.
Then she simply turned and left.
Wait, Liv said to the retreating form. That's it? No trap? No bartering? Between gods, Samilla said. Unwilling gods at that. No, if you take his offer, you'll know where to find him. You'll feel him, perhaps do right now, even from here. But if I may,
please, Liv said,
Take the time to visit your village. Wherever you came here, you're here now. You'll never find another good reason to visit a place so out of the way. Not with what you've become. You'll regret it if you don't go see what's become of the places you loved.
Liv looked at the older woman for a long moment.
Thank you. One question. We've come all this way, Samila Seya said. Do you hope to escape?
The Mott fell silent for quite some time. She waved off a silent voice speaking to her.
No, she said finally. I save hope for things that are possible.
On my way here, I came through Garriston, Liv said. Most of those who died in the battle were buried in mass graves. Samila Seya stopped breathing. But some of the slum dwellers who remained thought the drafters' bodies might be worth a ransom to their families, especially blackguards and bichromes.
Liv didn't say the name Usef Tep. She could see it was dangerous ground. Never break the emotions of those who pride themselves on logic.
Enter through the Hag's Gate. Take the third alley on the left. Blue door at the end. Ask for Odonio. Then Liv left. To burn the time until Mott was far enough away that she wouldn't know where Liv was going exactly, she went to the dead village of Recton. Eventually her feet took her to Kip's old hovel, somehow unburnt. She took in his scent deeply, deeply enough to send a message for him in Superviolet, wherever he was now. He was the only wild card left, the only hope for victory. Would he even understand it? Superviolet, Kip. Who else could send you a message in Superviolet? But he was half the world away, and she had not the control yet to make her message clear. It was probably hopeless. She unbarred a closet. What a shithole. There were little scratch marks and dark stains on the inside of the door. A rat's nest sat on the ground, with old bones and fur and rat droppings. She had no idea Kip had lived in such squalor.
Why are you crying?
Belial asked her. There was indeed wetness coursing down her face. Both sides.
I don't know, she said honestly.